WKTH Philomath 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Jared Dantzler.
And I'm Emily Young. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Wednesday Talk Radio, host Paul Rowland speaks with social ecological economist, Clive Spash about the upcoming Paris climate talks. At 9 on Political Perspectives, host Stephanie Potter speaks with Salvatore Gencarel about his book, A Man Among the Helpers, and the disconnection disease that pervades modern society. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia Headlines, Interviews, and Commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, Investigative News Radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, Chris Siegel hosts The Food Show. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, now is a great time to become one. Go to kboo.fm/give to find out about our matching grant.
And now, stay tuned for KBOO News in Depth. Doug McFay speaks with Rania Masri, an activist based in Beirut. The topic is the slanted media coverage of the Paris bombings. Good night, Emily.
Good night, Jared.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Rania Masri is an activist in Beirut. She was featured in a news release from the Institute for Public Accuracy about the attacks in Lebanon just before the attacks in Paris, titled From Beirut After Bombing, We Are Not Numbers. She stresses the need for authentic solidarity, transcending sectarian and national boundaries. She's long warned about U.S. wars feeding sectarianism and Gulf backing of groups like Daesh in Syria. We spoke with Rania Masri earlier today about Paris, Beirut, and the weaponization of grief.
It's been a very horrific week and 10 days for the entire world, I would say, not just for Lebanon and France. What I'm really interested in isn't just the fact that we're all suffering together now, but how the suffering is represented in the press, and particularly the responses that are coming out, both from the French government, recently from the Republican Party in the United States, from all these different governors in the United States. You know, what can we do now, and what can we learn, particularly as Americans, I have to say, given that the U.S. has gone through this before. I mean, 9/11 is still fresh on the minds of many of us. And I'm sure many of us remember George Bush's speech in which he said, you're either with us or with the terrorists. And we know what came from that endless war on terror, which actually has become a war of terror itself. So it's with that knowledge and that understanding that we then should look at what the French president is saying when he calls for, and I quote, a pitiless war. Who will die next, and what will be the result of the upcoming carnage, given that it seems that the French government is unfortunately going to follow in the footsteps of the U.S. government?
It's incredibly frustrating to see this. I mean, unthinking, unreasoning, blind hatred.
I have to say, I'm not asking for people to love each other. I'm not asking for that. I'm asking for people to be rational. And everybody wants to secure their borders. Everybody wants the people to live in peace. I think we can agree on that. But where we disagree is on the pathway towards that. And I hope that we would have learned from the past 14 years that wars inflicted upon other nations only breed terror, and they only breed the environment that contributes to the creation of other terrorists. this is not the pathway. So again, I'm not preaching a kumbaya, let's all just love each other and plant flowers. I'm actually speaking about a very realistic, rational process. If we are interested in securing our borders, the pathway towards that security cannot come through warfare. It simply does not work. It has to come through understanding why these organizations exist, what fuels them, what breeds them, and how we can then stop them. And with ISIS, the answer is actually much clearer and much more apparent, arguably, than it was in 9/11.
I'm curious. I saw a report earlier that the media. Oh yes, they covered there was coverage of the most recent Beirut bombing in Beirut. 1/40th of the amount of coverage that the attack in Paris received.
Yes. But even that coverage that was much less than the coverage of the French terrorist attack was problematic. Nobody referred to the neighborhoods in Paris as the stronghold of the French government. Nobody referred to the neighborhoods in Paris as allies of a particular regime or not. They referred to them as they are, which is neighborhoods and marketplaces and restaurants and stadiums, etc. And yet when it came down to Beirut, the vast majority of the press, both in Europe and in the United States, the vast majority referred to these working class neighborhood that was attacked, a working class neighborhood, they refer to it as a Hezbollah stronghold or a Hezbollah bastion, therefore leading people to think of it as a military headquarters and not a civilian marketplace. This is what really upset people here and what really upset me. We understand the disproportionate coverage. We understand that, of course, the West is going to report more on what happens in France than they're going to report about what happens in Lebanon. But that, let them at least report it accurately. Let them at least report it in a way that recognizes the humanity of the victims and does not dismiss people who have been killed in the terrorist bombings in Lebanon as if we are simply collateral damage and justifiable, you know, loss, while at the same time the very same press recognizes the humanity of the French victims. I ask that all our humanity be recognized.
A very reasonable request. Are any of the Western media getting the story right?
You know, I have to give credit to this. The New York Times, the Washington Post, they did write articles after there was massive condemnation coming from Lebanon, and particularly via social media, Facebook and Twitter, in which they recognized the disparity in the coverage between the terrorist attack in Beirut and the terrorist attack in Paris. And I recognize that. I mean, this is the Washington Post, the New York Times. They did issue one article or another. But overall, I would say that no, there hasn't been a mainstream press coverage of the attacks that has been fair and has been accurate. And I believe that these reportings have to go even further beyond recognizing that we had 44 people killed in a two-tier suicide bomb. They were 7 minutes apart. They were designed for maximum casualty. Their initial plan was actually to launch the suicide bomb in a hospital. I think what the mainstream press, particularly in the West and in the United States, needs to do is even go beyond recognizing our humanity here in Lebanon, but to understand that it's not just the Lebanese that have been suffering from these terrorist attacks, but that a few days earlier there was a terrorist attack in Iraq. And how much press coverage is given to that? The fact that literally, hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of Iraqis have been dying every single month since the U.S. invasion on Iraq in 2003. And that recognition is critical because we need to understand ISIS was born out of Iraq. ISIS was not born out of Syria. ISIS was born out of Iraq. And it was born from the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq. It was born from the torture, detention facilities that were run by the U.S. military. It was that anger, that humiliation, that destruction of Iraq that fueled the environment that led to ISIS. So we need to go back to that core. And for many of us also, I mean, people who are active in the United States, when I look at the disparity in the press coverage between covering the Baghdad bombings, covering the Beirut bombings, and covering the Paris attack, it reminds me so much of Black Lives Matter. I can't but remember Black Lives Matter in the state and the constant demand that Black Lives Matter and that there is a skewed power relations in the Western press as to how to report on a white man being killed and how to report a black man being killed. And that understanding that between that racist discourse that is still very prevalent in the United States, I think is critical for people in the U.S. to understand and to then extrapolate. Well, if the U.S. press has been dismissing that every 28 hours another unarmed person gets killed by a U.S. police force or a vigilante in the United States, and if that cry is barely heard in the U.S. mainstream press, how much more difficult would it be to reach the cry of people who have been killed at the hands of the U.S. military and continue to be killed as a consequence of the U.S. military, which is what we have in Iraq? I mean, 700 people have been killed every month since 2003 in Iraq.
The numbers are staggering. It's.
Yes.
I mean, it is overwhelming. And yet that's no excuse. It's no excuse.
You know, I was just thinking this today. It's extraordinarily hard to remain sane, but I continue to remember what Howard Zinn taught us and what the Zapatistas have taught us and what numerous other historians and activists have taught us, that pessimism is a luxury we cannot afford. We cannot afford that luxury of turning away from the carnage that we see around us, particularly because we have the ability to cry out, and we have the ability, the possibility of influencing the policy decision. There is a slim possibility that maybe if we cry out long enough, if we continue to remind people that war only breeds more terror, it only breeds more death, it does not result in anyone's security, maybe there'll be more of a cry for peace. Maybe there'll be more governors that will follow the line of Governor Inslee in the state of Washington and will follow now the statement from Oregon rather than the statements coming out from North Carolina to Texas to Illinois. Maybe there'll be more of that. So as overwhelming as it is, we cannot afford to be pessimistic. The times are too difficult for pessimism.
There has been some reaction, thankfully, with social media has fueled. And as you said, the Times and the Post have actually managed to acknowledge that their coverage was inadequate. Do you think if we keep up pressure, if we keep up, we tend towards xenophobia? It's not a thing I'm proud of.
Yes. I think it would have an impact. It would have a small impact on the media. But what also needs to happen in the United States is the liberation of the mainstream press from the corporate press. We need to be able to liberate media from the corporations and the individuals that own it and the financial interests of those media networks so that the media can return to its original objective, which is to inform us so we can become a more educated populace and not to entertain us and not to create more sensational journalism to empower our xenophobia. And to do that, it requires more than simply contacting the Washington Post or the New York Times. It demands empowering all alternative media. And it demands, you know, supporting the PBS networks that are still present in the United States. And it demands actually working truly fundamentally to support a third-party system in the United States rather than the binary political system that has crippled everyone in the United States, this choice between Tweedledum or Tweedledee. We need to be liberating the United States. I say we, as an American speaking here, the United States has to be liberated from this crippling electoral system, and that is tied to the media system, it's tied to the prison industrial complex, it's tied to numerous other things. So it goes hand in hand. So in the same venue that, yes, we continue to put pressure on the Washington Post and the New York Times and the others, we continue to build alternative press, we should also work for the long term to actually build a strong, vibrant, representative third political party, such as the Green Party, such as other parties. But that vitally has to be so that we don't constantly get into the voting for the lesser of the two evils, which continues to bring us evil.
A friend once remarked, the choice of the lesser of two evils, it's really the evil of two lessers.
Very true.
So I know it's late there, and I am so grateful to you for taking the time. Any closing thoughts for our Portland listeners? And again, I'm speaking with Rania Masri. She's in Beirut, an activist there.
I really hope Oregon continues to follow the lead of Washington State, both in the sense of the recent statements from Governor Inslee and the fact that, you know, there is a socialist member of the city council in the city of Seattle. I would love to see the West Coast lead the liberation of the rest of the country in the United States. And in the meantime, to empower solidarity across, I mean, from the United States to France to Lebanon, to have voices come out of Oregon to remind the French people and the French government about what the horrors of the war of terror actually did, both to the United States people. I mean, we remember the U.S. Patriot Act that was a consequence of the war of terror, and as well the millions upon millions of people that have died directly and indirectly because of George Bush and his predecessors' war of terror. So the more cries that come from the United States to plead with François Hollande of France to take another route, the more it would be better for the entire world.
Again, I've been speaking with Rania Masri. She is an activist in Beirut, and she was recently in a piece on accuracy.org titled From Beirut After Bombing, We Are Not Numbers. Rania Masri, thank you so very much.
And thank you for the call. I appreciate that very much. All the best to you all.
Thank you. This is Doug McVeigh with KBOO News.
Thank you.